Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, and that means it's time for another awesomely exciting episode of Stunt Treks with yours truly, Uncle Jim, and the one and only Leslie Hoffman. Before we get started, I just want to say happy Easter to everybody out there who's listening tonight. Normally, we wouldn't be having a show tonight because I would be visiting my family in New York. However, because of this little thing called COVID, we're not allowed to do that. So that means I'm available to join Leslie tonight on this awesome podcast. And tonight we're going to be talking about Star Trek in the beginning, the early days of Star Trek, TOS, as people refer to it, Star Trek, the original series. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. If you'd like to join in our conversation or share a story from a convention or how you got involved in Star Trek, please give us a call. We'll be hanging out with you here live for the next hour. Once again, that's 646-668-2433. So, Leslie, how's everything going up in Saranac Lake on this beautiful Easter Sunday?
Well, actually, today it's been a nice day, and there's no snow on the ground, so I was able to take my little dog Isaiah outside and let him walk around for a while. But it's just been crazy. I mean, one day there's snow on the ground, the next day it's melted away, and then the next day we get like 4 inches of snow. We have a snowstorm. So right now it's thawed away again. And hopefully this is the end of it. March came in like a lion. Hopefully it came out glam and we're into April now.
Let's hope so, because we don't want snow on first contact day. For those of you who are Star Trek fans, why else would you not be listening to this show? Star Trek Day is the day that Zefram Cochrane meets up with the Vulcans and they land on Earth. And, that's going to be on Monday. And Paramount Plus has a lot of great Star Trek stuff planned for you guys, a lot of panels, Star Trek marathons, all kinds of great stuff. So why don't you look up the schedule, see if there's a panel that you might be interested in. Tune into Paramount Plus and watch some of the Star Trek marathon. They have a list of all the episodes they're going to be playing. It's also going to be on Peacock for those of you who like to stream your shows and have cut the cord with cable. You can catch it on Peacock as well. So please check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. So, Leslie, tonight we had a fan request that we talk about Star Trek in the early days, how it all began. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And I think before we do that, I have this clip I want to play for you guys, something, a little something that I put together. If you've watched Star Trek, particularly the original series, there's a couple of tropes, there's a couple of things that people always think of when you say Star Trek. The first one, of course, is beam me up Scotty, which actually was never really said. The closest it ever came was in Star Trek IV when Captain Kirk is in the park and he says, "Scotty, beam me up." That's as close as it ever came. But still, "beam me up, Scotty" is like one of the most popular Star Trek catchphrases ever. Of course, "live long and prosper" is another one. That was said on the show. A red shirt dying on Star Trek Left and Right. That's another one. Captain Kirk being shirtless, which we talked about last week, happened in 25 episodes of the 79. So that's kind of a trope that is true. And this next one. Now, this next one I think is fun because DeForest Kelly was such a great actor and everybody loved Bones so much. So to start off this conversation, I just want to play this little clip for you guys. It's short. This is every time that Bones said, "well, I'll let you guys enjoy it."
"My name is McCoy. I'm a doctor."
"What am I, a doctor or a moon shuttle conductor?"
"I jumped every time a light came on around here. I'd end up talking to myself."
"I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer."
"You're a healer. There's a patient. That's an order."
"I'm a surgeon, not a psychiatrist."
"Look, I'm a doctor, not an escalator. Spock, give me a hand."
"I'm a doctor, not a mechanic. I'm a doctor, not an engineer."
"No, you're an engineer."
"I'm a doctor, not a coal miner."
"You keep saying that. Are you a doctor, aren't you?"
"I don't know."
I love that, and I just wanted to play that for you guys. It was a perfect opportunity with the topic of tonight's show. So, Leslie, I want to start us off by telling our listeners a little bit about myself and how I got involved in Star Trek. Everybody knows that D. Leslie Hoffman is actually a real part of Star Trek because she's been on Star Trek for real. So we'll get to that in a second, but I just wanted to share with you guys, way, way back in the 70s, I live in upstate New York. Now, a lot of people think that New York is like nothing but a gigantic city, but that is not true. New York City is a big, gigantic city, but it's only a sliver of New York. I live in upstate New York outside of Albany, which is just like any other town across the United States. Very small town. We have three TV stations, ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS. And we had antennas. You had to put tin foil on and move the foil around to get reception. My grandparents lived in Brooklyn, New York, and I would spend my summers down in Brooklyn. And they had a TV show on at midnight called Chiller Theater. And Chiller Theater would play King Kong, King Kong versus Godzilla, Creature from the Black Lagoon, The Blob, The Thing, all these classic sci-fi movies that I would love to watch as a kid. Well, one night I got up at midnight and I snuck downstairs and I turned on Chiller Theater, and lo and behold, this strange TV show popped on, and it was Star Trek, and I had never seen anything like it. And it was a double feature, two episodes. I don't remember what they were, but I watched it, and I was glued to the television. And every night at midnight, I'd get up and I'd sneak downstairs and I'd watch Star Trek. Now, some of the first episodes that I remember watching was Spectre of a Gun. And what I remember about that one is this is so strange because they're only half a set and clocks are floating in the sky and you can see through the sides of the building. And it intrigued me, like, what's going on here? So I was sucked right in. Another one that I remember watching was The Return of the Archons with the giant Jawas walking around shooting people. That one stuck in my head as well. Arena with the Gorn to this day is still one of my favorites. Balance of Terror is another one that I remember seeing with the ships battling each other in space. Of Dagger of the Mind is another early one I remember seeing. So I got pulled into Star Trek very, very early, and I'm so glad that I accidentally fell upon it. I happen to be the same age as Star Trek. I was born 3 months before Star Trek premiered, so to say I've been watching Star Trek my whole life would be a lie, because I didn't start watching it when I was in the crib. But did start watching it relatively young. With the exception of TOS, I saw all the animated series first run in every Star Trek movie and every episode since then first run. One of the things about Star Trek that attracted me to it was the history in Star Trek. By that, I mean every time the Enterprise went to a planet, we found out that this was a former captain or a friend of Kirk's or somebody he knew, and they thought that for some reason Nazis could help this planet get back to normal again, or there was a disease going on and this captain stranded his whole crew there and they fought like gladiators, or, you know, it was always something else going on that the Enterprise had to fix up, meaning that this world of the Federation was huge. There were 12 other starships besides the Enterprise that were out there exploring strange new worlds. And the biggest thing that caught my attention is when I saw an episode called The Menagerie, and I found out that Captain Kirk was not the first captain of the Enterprise. In fact, there was another captain that Spock served under, Captain Pike. So Star Trek had so much history in it. I started reading the comic books. I couldn't get enough. I started reading the paperbacks. Entropy Effect was the first one I remember reading, and I was hooked. Now, jump fast forward about 10 years or so, my very first Star Trek convention was in upstate New York at the Hilton in Albany. Mark Leonard was the guest star there, and it was right around Star Trek III: The Search for Spock time. I got a chance to meet Mark Leonard, and that was it. That's all it took. So I started going to conventions. Any convention I could go to, I would go to. And then eventually I ran my own conventions in upstate New York, and I have been a Star Trek fan, a Trekkie, yes, a Trekkie, ever since. I love the message behind Star Trek. I love what it means to people, and I love how it brings people together, like myself and the Leslie Hoffman, and you guys that are listening right now as well. So that's how I got involved in Star Trek, and I'm still involved in Star Trek. I'm a member of the Klingon Assault Group, and I cosplay as a Klingon, and I wave my batleth all over the place. And if you run into me at a convention, I'll let you touch my batleth. My cat, AJ, likes to visit me during the show, and from time to time, you might hear my mic get muffled or some purring sound or a meowing in the background, and that's AJ because he loves to sit on my shoulder while I'm doing the show. I put a picture of him on our Facebook page so everybody can meet AJ. So you guys can go over to Trek Talking and Beyond on Facebook and see a picture of AJ laying on top of my bat list. So anyways, so that's how I got involved in Star Trek.
And on the Leslie Hoffman appreciation page? I don't know if I've seen it.
No, but you know what? I will put that on there as soon as the show is over. I will put that picture on the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization page so that you guys can all see my my mascot, AJ, and my batleth. But anyways, I'm still involved in Star Trek today. I go to a lot of conventions. There aren't Star Trek conventions around anymore, unfortunately, and perhaps Leslie and I'll get a chance to talk about that later on. There is one that I try to attend every year, and that's Trek Ticonderoga up in Ticonderoga, New York, which is the site of the original Star Trek series set tour. It's a very small convention up there at the Ticonderoga High School, but it's very fun and very personal. And I've met Leslie up there a couple of times as well, and I try to get up to that one every single year that they do it. Now, they haven't done it because of COVID, but hopefully they'll do it this year. And of course, I do this podcast with Leslie every Sunday, and I do Trek Talking and Beyond every Thursday with Charles and Eric, my Trekspert. So that's my story. Now, Leslie got a slightly more exciting story than mine, as I said, because Leslie is a part of the Star Trek history. She is really involved in Star Trek, and I will let Leslie take over from here and fill you guys in on how she got involved in Star Trek, if you don't mind, Leslie.
Well, boy, that's, I mean, if you want the real brief history, as you say, I saw episodes on television and was totally fascinated by them. I started memorizing the episodes. I mean, really memorizing the dialogue, all that. Then I actually went down to New York City to the second Star Trek convention, and I even entered the trivia contest, and I came in third. Not bad for a little girl from Saranac Lake, population 5,000, and I'm up against all these other people in New York City, and came in third.
Not bad at all.
Then I chose the career as a stunt woman. At that time, Star Trek was long gone. I mean, there was no Star Trek. Years went by. I started in the business, or I became union in 1976. There was no Star Trek. Got married, came back to New York. Marriage didn't work out. Went back to California. And it turns out that one of my stunt buddies from this gym that I used to go to was now the stunt coordinator of Next Generation, but that was over with by the time I got back to California. But he was doing Deep Space Nine, and then he was doing Voyager. He did not get to do Enterprise, and unfortunately they feel that this is really strange. They feel that TV stunt coordinators cannot coordinate a feature film, which is just total, you know, it's baloney. But anyways, because of Dennis Madelone, my whatever peer, we went to the same sort of workout stunt gym, and Tom Morga, I started working on Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Star Trek Voyager, and I was the right size to double Torres. So that was a lot of fun.
But, oh, yeah, we talked about that
you
on
also
previous
said,
shows.
Is that...
Yep, we've talked about that before, so you guys
yeah,
can go back
yeah.
and listen
I mean,
to that.
It's so funny because... when they first gave whatever you want to call it, the nickname to people who love Star Trek, Trekkies, you just accepted it. I mean, it wasn't that it was a nasty name or anything. And then all of a sudden, I don't know if it was Next Generation, Deep Space Nine or something, somebody got offended and they wanted to be Trekkers, not Trekkies. Well, I always identify myself as a Trekkie, and now the two words are interchangeable. I mean,
oh,
you can call yourself a Trekkie or a Trekker, and I don't, as far as I know, no one's offended.
No, absolutely not. And I think that I remember when TNG came out, that's when the Trekkie Trekkers War started. And that basically started, we have the same thing going on today, matter of fact. And we have it, except now they call it New Trek and Modern Trek or whatever. It's been going on in Star Trek fandom forever. It started with TNG. And that's when fans of TNG didn't want to be associated with fans of TOS. They were Trekkies. We're more sophisticated. We're Trekkers. So that's how they separated themselves. And without social media and everything else, back in the day, that's how they did it. I like what you said. I don't think it makes a difference today. Trekkie Trekker doesn't matter. And that's because there's so many different Star Trek shows out there right now that I don't think it matters, really. I prefer Trekkie myself, but it doesn't matter one way or the other to me. I'm glad that they're making Star Trek. I'm glad that J.J. Abrams brought Star Trek back from the brink, because after the cancellation of Enterprise and after the poor, poor showing at the box office of Star Trek Nemesis, Star Trek was not in a good place. J.J. Abrams made Star Trek 2009 and made billions. Made Into Darkness, he made billions. And so now we have this Star Trek universe going on right around us. We have Paramount Plus, the home of Star Trek. We have Discovery, Season 4 on the way, Picard Season 2 on the way, Lower Decks Season 2 on the way. We have Short Treks. We have Star Trek Prodigy, which is on its way. And we have Star Trek Strange New Worlds, the Pike series, which is on the way. And now there's talk of making a new Star Trek movie. So now is a great time to be a Trekkie, Trekker, whatever you want to call yourself. It's a great time. And
yeah.
I also want to say that regardless of what Star Trek you prefer, it doesn't matter whether you like TOS or whether you like DS9, whether you like Discovery or whether you like Enterprise. They're all children in a family, all of them. And, you know, you might like one better than the other or vice versa, but they're all part of the family. And they're all different own way.
You know, I follow threads on different Star Trek sites, and I think they finally closed the thread, but someone was complaining about, back in the 60s that Ricardo Montalban was playing an Indian. Well, excuse me, he was Mexican, and at the time when he was first getting in the business, I'm not talking about Star Trek, I'm talking about when he was a leading man in movies, Mexican was a dirty word. You did not say you were from Mexico. They billed him as the Latin lover. So there's several movies that he's the lead in, but he's from South America. They couldn't say he was from Mexico. So that's how crazy it was, like in the 40s and 50s.
It does get a little bit crazy sometimes, but just remember, we're all part of the same family, and you know, no Star Trek is better than any other Star Trek. It's just your personal preference. That's all. You know, and the other thing too is, you know, Star Trek, the original series, was made in the 60s. And Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, all these new shows are being made in 2020, 50-plus years later. So, you know, cinematography has changed drastically. Camera angles have changed. So much is different between now and the 60s. That you can't look at them and compare them because they're literally decades apart. So just enjoy them
for
what they are.
You know, like when you have aliens, and I'm specifically talking about Klingons. I mean, Michael Dorn is black, but what is her name?
Yep.
Susie Plankton.
Kalar.
She's
yep.
white. I mean, who cared? You watched the episode and they were Klingons. You didn't say, well, this is a black actor and this is a white actress. They were Klingons. Period.
Exactly. And it didn't matter. So believe it or not, guys, we have to take our first break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the beginning of Star Trek, where it all started. How it came to be, and we're just going to have some fun with that. So our phone number here is 646-668-2433. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call right after this very quick yet very important message. Don't touch that dial.
Trek Talking. All things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday nights, 7:30 to 9:30, all hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking. Boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
And we're back with Uncle Jim and the Leslie Hoffman, and we're talking about Star Trek, the original series. So, Leslie, let's talk a little bit about how Star Trek got started. You want to take over here?
Yeah. Gene Roddenberry started out as a writer for many television shows in the 1950s, I mean, way before Star Trek, and he was even pitching ideas for various series. Again, even before Star Trek, he had different ideas, and that's what you do in Hollywood. If you want to become a producer, you come up with ideas for television shows. So through the years, he worked on different shows with Gene Kuhn, Gary Lockwood, I'm going to mess this one up, Joe DeGosta? How do you pronounce that?
Yeah, Joe DeGosta.
And Leonard Nimoy, Nichelle Nichols, Majel Bird. I mean, again, pre-Star Trek. He wrote many episodes on Have Gun Will Travel, and he actually won a Writers Guild of America Award for Best Teleplay in 1958. So at one point, he decided to try to pitch Star Trek to MGM. And they kind of went, this sounds good, but they weren't interested. You know, don't call us, we'll call you. So then he went over to Desilu Productions, and he was offered a one-script deal, hired as the producer and allowed to work on his own projects. Again, not necessarily Star Trek yet. Desilu Studios was in financial difficulties. The only successful show at that point was The Lucy Show, not I Love Lucy, but the show that came after I Love Lucy, The Lucy Show. She had divorced from Desi Arnaz, and I guess she bought out Desilu. He was gone. He was out of it. So Gene took the idea to Oscar Katz, the head of programming, and they worked on a plan to sell the series to, networks. I mean, they tried going to CBS, and CBS said, thank you, no thank you. It was because CBS already had Lost in Space. Now, Lost in Space, really, I don't know. I find Lost in Space as a comedy as opposed to Star Trek having deep moral meanings. I mean, would you agree with that? I mean, Lost in Space was entertaining. Whoops.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge Lost in Space fan, unfortunately.
Yeah. So they took the idea over to NBC, and they tried to downplay science fiction and tried to sell it as a Western, like Gunsmoke or Wagon Train. And the network was willing to fund the idea and make a pilot, which was The Menagerie, which later became the two-parter The Cage. But The Menagerie had Jeffrey Hunter, Captain Pike, and it had Majel Barrett as number one and all that kind of stuff. And actually, NBC paid for that pilot. The remaining cost was covered by Desilu, which would mean Lucille Ball covered it.
That's backwards. I just wanted to make a correction. They originally filmed The Cage, which would be made into the two-part episode of TOS called The Menagerie. It was the only two-part episode of TOS that was produced.
Oh,
Just a little correction.
The fingers go faster than the brain. So, you know, they tried to sell the cage. Now, NBC, even before, well, okay, so a pilot doesn't necessarily air on television. It's just shown to whatever network is supposedly buying it. And NBC in the 60s was very leery about a woman being second in command. I mean, God forbid something happens to the captain. You're telling me you're going to have a woman in command in the 1960s? You know, so they didn't like that. They didn't like the idea of the alien with the pointed ears because people might think that alien looked like Spock, looked like the devil. And in fact, the brochure that NBC was handing out to people, seeing if they were even interested in Star Trek, they were airbrushing Leonard Nimoy's ears. They were rounding them down because they didn't want them to see these pointed ears.
Yep.
And as promised, one of our favorite movies is Planet of the Apes. And the person that made Spock's ears is John Chambers, which is well known for the prosthetics on Planet of the Apes. But he actually created Spock's ears in 1966 and probably did the ape prosthetics in 67 or so. You know, so John Chambers, probably, if you had to put it in a timeline, did the pointed ears before he did the ape makeup.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, so there's a deep connection to Planet of the Apes, even with Star Trek. And back then, John even won, for Planet of the Apes, he won a special Oscar because they didn't have a category for prosthetic makeup. You know, they had a category for, I'll call it beauty makeup, but the idea of gluing, you know, latex or foam rubber on a person's face to make them into an alien, I mean, we already talked about it. There was nothing like Star Trek until it came along.
Exactly.
So that's our Planet of the Apes salute for today.
We got to get Planet of the Apes in there, absolutely.
Right. And luckily none of the apes had pointed ears.
That we know of.
Anyways, NBC did not like the first pilot, but Lucille Ball was taken by Star Trek. I mean, I know people say Majel Barrett is like the queen or whatever of Star Trek, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not belittling Majel Barrett, but believe me, without Lucille Ball, there would not have been a Star Trek. I mean,
yep,
she ran
exactly.
Desi Lu. In fact, she overruled the studio board to finance the show. I mean, in other words, well, who knows how many guys were sitting in the room, but she came in the room and she said, "Yo, we're gonna do another pilot for this series." So,
and the rest,
you know,
is
they
history.
Did...
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. So then after two seasons, And amazingly enough, low ratings. Well, you know, now we come into an interesting thing is that, you know, what kind of families have that Nielsen box? You know,
right.
how are they deciding that they were getting low ratings?
Back in the 60s, I have no clue.
Yeah, so...
No clue.
After two seasons, they were facing cancellation by NBC. And, well, you rarely hear about her husband, but Bijo Tremble and her husband, John Tremble, started a grassroots national campaign to save Star Trek. And actually, the students of Caltech got involved in this. And there was this huge letter-writing campaign that went into the NBC, and I forget what the mathematical formula is, but one letter technically is like creates 100 votes or something. I don't remember what the number is, but they must have gotten a bunch of letters, and NBC relented, and they did do a third season. But then they canceled it again. What I didn't know, I just found this out, you know, doing my background history on it, is that so the fans even tried to protest, you know, to bring in a fourth season, but this time NBC just said no go. I don't know, you know, just to talk about, well, you kind of covered it in the first half hour. It's amazing that a series that only went 2.5 seasons is now, let's see, where am I at, 60 years, is over 60 years old. And with new Star Treks coming out every year, or multiple Star Treks coming out every year.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
I think Paramount, forget about talking about NBC, I think Paramount finally gets it. And they know it's a moneymaker now.
Well, let's talk
and
a little
also,
bit.
Okay.
Things that a lot of, as far as the fourth season not being produced, we're going to talk about this a little bit on Trek Talking, by the way. On Thursday night, because we're going to be talking about The Cage and the pilot Where No Man Has Gone Before. So if you guys are interested, you can tune in on Thursday night for that. So I've been doing some research for Trek Talking as well. And what a lot of fans may or may not know is that season one of Star Trek was all Gene. He was involved in everything, every step of the way. He started to step back a little bit in season two because he was really felt overwhelmed by the whole thing, very time consuming, and he wasn't spending much time with his family and loved ones. But by the time they canceled the show and renewed it for a third season, Gene had completely stepped away from Star Trek in season three and was no longer heavily involved in it. And that's why a lot of fans will say that season three is the weakest season of the three, because Gene wasn't as heavily involved in it by that point in time. Also, the studio pulled one over on the fans, and when they renewed Star Trek, they put it on at 10 o'clock on Friday night. Now, you have to remember, this is the 60s. You didn't have DVR. You didn't have TiVo. You didn't have a VCR where you could record it and watch it later. So if you weren't home on Friday night at 10 o'clock, you didn't watch Star Trek, and that was it. You missed it. I really feel that the studio set it up to take a fall by putting it in such a terrible, terrible time slot. My opinion.
Yes. No, that's absolutely right, is that when you could have, like, a top series, and if a studio wants to get rid of it, they will change the date. You know, let's say they'll put it on Sunday at 10 o'clock or something. Or yeah, they'll just put it on the day that people don't usually tune into television, and then it gets low ratings, and then they have a legitimate excuse. It has low ratings. We're going to cancel it. No, that's a tactic that they use.
And they did it with Star Trek. So, but we have just about 10 minutes left. There's something else I want to talk about with Star Trek. I touched on it briefly, and Leslie touched on it briefly, but I think it's huge, and that's Star Trek convention. Star Trek was the show that started conventions, and there were Star Trek conventions pretty much every single weekend somewhere around the country. And I think that what made Star Trek so popular is the fact that fans could actually go to these conventions and you could meet George and Michelle and Walter. You could meet Leonard Nimoy. You could meet these the people that you watch on the show, and you could meet them personally. You could get a picture with them. You could shake their hand. You could get an autograph. They did Q&A. And I think that doing that made people feel more connected to the show, and they felt closer to the actors because they had a personal connection because they met them. And I think that that helped make Star Trek as popular as it became, because Star Trek actually became 1,000 times more popular when it hit syndication than it did when it ran first run. And I think that's because of the conventions. Would you agree with me, Leslie?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I don't know, maybe I was 17 or whatever. Well, let's see, 1972, 55, 65. I was either 16 or 17 years old when I went to New York City. And I actually have a picture of me, you know, kneeling down next to George Takei. I mean, as you say. I mean, oh my God, I have a picture with me with Sulu.
Yeah, and also I think that when TNG came along, all of the actors for TNG were out there on that convention circuit every weekend. They wanted that show to succeed, so they were out every weekend somewhere. You could meet Marina Sirtis, Michael Dorn, Brent Spiner, Patrick Stewart, all of them everywhere. And when they mingled in with the TOS actors, it was something special. And I think that that's why Star Trek was so booming in the 80s. However, unfortunately, these big companies got involved in Star Trek conventions, drove them into the ground, and started having what I call multimedia conventions, and no longer having Star Trek conventions. And I think, unfortunately, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, you know, all the new Star Treks that are coming along will never get to enjoy the love and admiration that these actors would have gotten if they were at Star Trek conventions rather than massive multimedia conventions where they have people from the Avengers you know, the horror movies, Friday the 13th, The Nightmare on Elm Street, Star Wars, oh, and Star Trek as well, which is unfortunate because nothing, I'm telling you, nothing was better than spending an entire weekend at a hotel filled with Trekkies. It was incredible, guys. Every way you turned, you'd see Klingons and Romulans and all kinds of great Star Trek cosplay. Star Trek trivia, Star Trek games. Everybody was watching Star Trek in their room. They had after-room parties. They had bands playing Star Trek music. It was just a whole weekend of nothing but Star Trek. That's what
actually,
it was like.
Actually, one of my favorite memories, this was a convention in Los Angeles, was that I had to go to the ladies' room, And, you know, I come out of the bathroom to wash my hands, and there's this green lady with a compact with green makeup in it. And she's, you know, she's correcting or, you know, whatever, making sure her makeup looked good. And it just, it struck me so funny that there's this green woman putting, you know, green makeup on herself. But that's how hardcore the fans are.
I don't know if I've told this story on this show or not, but I was up at Ticonderoga the last time they did it, which would have been, what, 2019?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if – were you at that one with me, Leslie, in 2019? I don't remember.
No, I didn't go down on 2019.
Okay, so I was there in 2019, and Mr. Spock, Ethan Peck, was the guest there. And there was a guy dressed up as Saru. And if you guys look at my profile picture, you'll see a picture of me with this guy, Saru. And he was, he could have been on the show. I swear to God, he was that good. He even had the big hoofs on his feet. Incredible. And I was dressed up as a Klingon. And the show was over, so Karen and Jamie were going out to the car, and I'm like, well, I really got to go to the bathroom, and I got to get this head off because the sweat just builds up. You're wearing a rubber head all day, so the sweat just builds up on your forehead, and it's just, you got to take it. And it's hot up in Ticonderoga, and the high school is not air-conditioned, so it was hot. So I go in the bathroom. And I'm standing at the urinal, and who comes up and stands next to the urinal right next to me? Mr. Saru. So there's a Klingon in one stall and Saru in the other, and we're doing our business, and I asked him, I said, geez, it must be really hot in that thing. And here we are talking about how hot we are wearing these. He had a full head rubber headpiece on. I only had the top of my head covered. I pull off my headpiece, and all the sweat starts running down my face. And, you know, I said thank you to Saru, told him he looked great, and went out to the car and to the Karen and Jamie. You'll never guess who I shared a urinal with. It was Saru. And that kind of stuff only happens at a Star Trek convention. Oh, boy. But it was fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah, so as we're running out of time here, is that, you know, I just want to say that it's amazing to think that the heart and soul of Star Trek has lived on forever, and more series, I'm sure more series are going to even come after the ones that hopefully will be filmed this year, and I just feel honored that I was lucky enough to be a part of all this. And actually on Facebook, well, it's a private page. I happen to be one of the admins to cast and crew of Star Trek. And when we say Star Trek, we mean that TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise is pretty much the group that we're talking about, because it was the same special effects people and all that kind of stuff. And it's amazing. I mean, so we're if you go to the beginning of TNG, you're talking about 1980s. And, well, I forget how many people are on our page, but, I mean, we're still connected. So even the cast and crew is still connected.
And I meet so many great people from my involvement on our Facebook talking and beyond, and from this podcast, Stunt Trek, and my Trek Talking podcast. I meet a lot of great people. I meet a lot of great people up at Ticonderoga when I travel up there for that convention. It's small, but it's personal, and it's the only Star Trek convention that I know of that's still around anyways. And anytime that I can go out in public dressed up as a Klingon and I can spread Star Trek around, and when when I see a kid smile or wants a picture with me, it just makes it all worthwhile, Leslie. That's what it's all about, and I love it. It's the only time that I can step out of being this boring person that works for a living and blah, 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 and I can be somebody else. I can be, that's true. I'm not. I'm Uncle Jim. But when I'm a Klingon, I get to be someone different, and that's so much fun. I mean, you got to be a real one. I mean, you got to be B'Elanna Torres on real Star Trek, so that's incredibly special, and I just can't even imagine what that was like. But I love taking pictures with fans. I love talking to fans, and I love meeting fans. It's so special.
Well, I know that up in Canada, there's a group that go around to entertain people, and then you have Russ Hasselage with the Federation and his different Star Trek chapters, I guess you would call them, and the basic point of their chapters is to do good for the community.
Yep,
I mean, that's
right.
What Star Trek teaches us.
Yes. At the base, I think Star Trek is based on the IDIC, infinite diversity and infinite combinations. And as I hinted at earlier, you don't have to like something. You don't have to support it. You don't even have to understand it. But as a Star Trek fan, you have to respect it. And that's what it all comes down to. Basic human respect. So, Leslie, we're out of time. Wow.
Where'd the time go? But we did mention Planet of the Apes.
We got Planet of the Apes in there. I want to let you guys know that please head on over to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page. If you have a topic that you'd like to hear Leslie and I talk about, this topic that we talked about tonight, Joy, mentioned to Leslie, so here we are talking about it. So if you guys want to hear us talk about something, head over to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization page and drop us a line, and Leslie and I will be more than happy. We love to talk. So we'll talk about your topic, and just say hi to Leslie too. She loves to hear from you guys. Make sure you tune in to Trek Talking and Beyond Thursday night, 7:30. We're going to be talking about The Cage and Where No Man Has Gone Before, which we touched on a little bit here tonight as well. And, of course, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying thank you for joining us. And, of course, thank you so, so much to the one and only Leslie Hoffman. We couldn't be doing this show without you. So thank you so much for joining us tonight, Leslie.
Again, it's always fun to, well, in this case, it's childhood memories for me. What we talked about tonight.
I think a lot of people feel that way. And we're going to end the show. I usually end the show with Patrick Stewart and saying "Make it so," but we're going to do something a little different in honor of tonight's topic. We're going to end the show with something a little different, and this would be the first time that somebody actually said the monologue besides the captain of the Enterprise himself. And this is Leonard Nimoy. And you guys, please enjoy yourself. Stay safe. Be good to each other. And hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Space, the final frontier. These are the continuing voyages of the starship Enterprise. Her ongoing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.